You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yep, come on in. Well, not just trolling today. We're going to go to the bottom and the top, and we're going to take a little visit. We're going to go out down through the archipelago, if you will, and talk story with some folks that are actually part of the council. And as you know, the West Council is the biggest in landmass in the country. So we take care of CNMI. We go all over the place. Samoa. We certainly go to where both our next guests are coming from, to Guam and to Saipan. And it's sort of neat and interesting when we get this opportunity every now and again to talk to some of these guys that are actually in the trenches and doing the fishing. And it is amazing to me, and this takes quite an effort, how many of these people really have one gig that they do, and then they end up coming to Oahu to meetings, or they end up traveling all over their fishery, and they're certainly not at that time fishing. They're working on your ability to continue to fish. So first of all, we want to welcome and tip our hats to two guys. James Bora, he's from Guam, where they have tree snakes. And Mike Fleming, he's from Saipan, where they have all kinds of interesting weather. They're both fishermen, and we'll find out what kind. First of all, James, from Guam, born and raised?
Yes, sir.
And so that means that you've certainly seen an awful lot changing. Every time I've gone there in the past, after a big storm, I'm amazing that the treetops are all gone. And then you go there the next time. You guys have had some unbelievable weather. Knock on wood, this year hasn't, I guess, has been as bad as some, but how does that affect you, and how does it affect the fishery?
Oh, well, yeah, weather does play a big factor in our fishery in Guam. Typhoons come. We sometimes don't fish for weeks or months, depending on how bad we were hit.
Okay, what kind of style of fishing is your favorite?
Well, I've fished every method. I've fished for over 40 years. I started out hook and line from shore. Then got into spearfishing by the age of 9. So I've been a competitive spear fisherman for most of the time.
By the way, a lot of people here don't understand that spearfishing in Guam and in other places in the reaches is a viable and important part of commercial fishing. It's not just poking fish for fun. You're spearfishing for a living, many guys.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I spearfished for a long time. In 2002, I was able to get my boat out of Hilo, Hawaii, Force Marine. And that's when I got into the pelagics and deep bottom. Deep bottom was always a target for me. So today, my main and probably the most fun for me is deep bottom fishing.
We're going to talk about that. And to James Patterson at Force, it's interesting to see how many of your boats have gone absolutely throughout the Pacific. Okay, also joining us is Mike Fleming. Mike is from Saipan. And Saipan, it's a little bit different there than in other places. And same thing with you, Mike. First of all, thanks for joining us here, coming all the way. That's a long trip for you guys, huh?
Yeah. Thank you.
I should say, it's the same thing I asked to James, and because of his upbringing and stuff, he's had multiple different modalities of fishing. Right now, he's got the boat, so he's offshore. What about you?
I did practically about the same. I started out too. I'm an old school fisherman from my grandpa and uncle.
Yeah.
I started fishing when I was 8 years old, and I got my boat in 1996.
Okay, well, that it's still floating, that means you figure out a way to make a living at it, knock on wood sometimes.
Right, it's hard. Investment on boat now is very expensive, and you start out, you know, from shore fishing all the way, like James, I spearfish, poking fish, making a living for food, and bring food on the table. And then eventually I got into deep bottom because it is something that has not been well practiced over there. Only a few used to be just hand and...
I was going to ask you that. I'm imagining that most of the... And on the mainland, they call it ground fishing. But what we call it bottom fishing. And then we have deep and shallow. So when you're talking about is... You're talking about paka, or are you talking about onaga, deep water, or what are you talking about?
That is the one. The main target that we do now is deep bottom.
Yeah, so you're looking at snappers.
Green snappers, onaga, and paka paka.
And for those that don't know, that's the depth of how deep.
You're ranging between 600 and down to 1,000 feet.
Yeah, that's and the methods. How do you retract your gear? I know, but when I went down there the first time, it was by hand. Everybody had a basket of ahu, and they would bottom fish, and they would have upper body strength that you couldn't believe because it was all by hand.
Exactly. Yeah. I started with that with my grandpa and my uncle with the koto line, with the basket.
And then
eventually when the reel came into existence, I started using electric reel.
Oh, boy,
Then that's when the killing really maxed up, and you just go out there and hit the banks and but of course all this fishing comes back to when you go fishing. It depends on the moon and the weather and the tide, and that's the optimum when you go fishing. And grandpa and uncle taught me well on that.
What about when we're talking with James a few minutes ago about the weather? I mean, how important in Saipan is weather to bottom fishing?
Oh, weather is very important factor.
Because how far out are you going for bottom
fishing? Minimum from 10 to 30 miles up to 50 mile radius.
Yeah.
And a small boat, about 20 footer.
So you have to be pretty strong of stomach when you're out there in the rough water.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to have to.
But you know what? I've always liked this because a lot of our listeners go fishing because they like to go fishing. And you guys go fishing because you, in other words, you like to go fishing, but you have to go fishing. Mm-hmm. So where I might say, it's too cold, you guys can't say that. We got to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, fishing is a way of life. Yeah. I won't be doing this for 40 years.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, you have to fine tune your fishing thing.
Or you starve to death.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, if you can't make a living on fishing, I think you'll quit within the first 3 years. Yeah. But since you know what you're doing out there, that's why you last that long.
Yeah. That being said, let's go back to James a little bit because, first of all, I was always loving Guam the many, many times that I went down there when I was in the supply business, because in many cases, the fish is right outside there. But I'm guessing that maybe a little bit, unlike Mike, that maybe you're not going as far out to go bottom fishing as they are?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, we do have some southern banks, of course, some northern banks between Guam and Rota. There's some southern banks, white tuna, as far as 60 miles south of Guam. But just the coastal areas around the island, there's a lot of potential.
Okay, there is a big difference being able to barely get by and feed yourself and your family than being a commercial fisherman. And I do know that when I introduced both of you guys, that both of you guys are thousands of miles away from fishing right now. That must mean that you have a vested interest in seeing what's happening about regulations and things that may end up in your part of the fishery.
That is correct.
What are some of your concerns? I do know that there's different ways that these stock assessments that we see these reports are done. We put a lot of faith in these things. Unfortunately, there's some people at the higher up the food chain that make decisions based on some of these things that may affect folks like yourself. What are some of your concerns?
Yeah, well, for me, just over this past week, we've been here with the WPSAR, going over the stock assessment for American Samoa, Guam, and the CNMI, and basically looking at the stock assessment and our annual catch limits and what they could be based on the available data.
Mm-hmm.
And the available data coming from krill surveys, which are voluntary. Yeah. And basically, the data that I see or has been provided, which is going to determine how the ACLs are played out.
Yeah, by the way, the ACLs are annual catch limits, for those of you who don't know. And there already are some in place. The concern is, are they going to be decreased or increased? And if so, what is the science that they're using to do that, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And in our, for Guam, in a nutshell, is basically we're not overfished, but we're overfishing. Mm-hmm. And that's based on the data provided.
Let's make sure that people really get that.
Yeah.
Right now they're saying, okay, the stock is okay, but you are overfishing it.
Yeah.
And they're making a scientific decision there, right?
Correct.
First of all, if you know your territory, you kind of know what it's like. You've been fishing for many, many years. Either the place is productive like it was when you started or it's not. Mm-hmm. Are there some areas that you can see where things need to be looked at a little bit?
No. So I can.
That's important.
It's not. And let me just explain. We have 160,000 people in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
And deep bottom fishermen in Guam, less than 10.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
And we have so much grounds. The essential fish habitat for deep bottom fish is large.
That being said, there must be a tremendous amount of dependence being placed on that few people to provide the fish that the market requires or wants.
Yeah, that's correct.
So the ACLs as they are, the catch limits as they are, Has it been sort of consistent?
Well, it was reduced to 66,000 a couple of years ago.
Okay. And what is being caught and sold right now? Out of the 66.
So based on the survey in 2017, a krill survey, it says that 15,000 pounds of deep of bottom fish were caught. And the challenge I have is that there's some of the shallower species that, mm-hmm. that range from near shore to 300 feet that are in that that bottom.
Yeah, and I'm worried about that because that's not even the same fish.
Correct.
Right? And so it's not the same buyer. It's not the same consumer.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So I'm not sure that it makes scientific sense to include those. What species are those we're talking about? I guess we're talking about just the regular inshore bottom fish. I don't know whether it's not better or whatever.
So like for example, the red gill emperor. Chamorro name is Mafuti.
Mafuti, right?
Yeah. So that fish you can catch from basically near shore to 300 feet of water, and anyone and everyone can go out and catch it. Yeah. Now it's very different for deep bottom fish. You're looking at depths deeper than 500 feet.
Right.
So the
that eliminates a lot of people right off the top.
As we all know, deep bottom fishing is a frustrating fishery.
Sure. Yeah, and by the way, it's either feast or famine. Either you hit the spot and, yay, we're catching fish, or, oh my goodness, where are we going to go to catch fish this time? And I'm not sure. I want to go back and forth because I think I want to go back and forth so that Mike and we can get the Saipan. Do you hear the same feeling? I mean, is it the same where you are with regards to intermingling the inshore bottom fish and the deeper water bottom fish?
Yes, it's the same as what James is echoing right now. Yeah. I have the same concerns and issues because, like you said, shallow water snappers or Mafuti, anybody can go out and catch it.
Yeah.
And if you lump that into the overall bottom fish, it really throws off the actual fish.
Especially when there's just volume. One number, right?
Yes.
Because the number doesn't... Listen, gang, in a perfect world, the number might differentiate between species. But here's the fact of the matter, and I want both of you... First of all, start with you, James, because when you go out and bottom fish, you're not certain of what you're going to catch when you put the line down there. So you can't say, well, you know, we can close off, you know, Opaka-paka, but not the others. And so you don't know when the lines come up what's on them.
That's correct.
So isn't that sort of frustrating, sort of a dilemma that it's that the species are not as maybe they should be better defined?
That's true. An example with Onaga, the peak of the bite could only last an hour to hour and a half, and then it's done. You could wait all day for a 1 hour bite.
Yeah. So you better hope you're in the right place with the right time and the right hooks are in the water and the right size fish come up.
And the right bait.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Oh, yeah. You know, I think that some of our local fishers would be interested in that because even though we're in the same ocean, there are really a lot of changes and differences. What is the bait of choice, Mike, when you guys are bottom fishing there? What is the choice bait?
Well, right now, when we did an assessment as a fisherman, why I'm not catching onaga at this particular bank for some reason, so I try to see the different bait if they want to eat. So what I do is I do one side tuna, aku, and the other side is squid.
Yeah. So you're chunking. You're
and soaking at the same time down. Right. And I'm having more bite on the tuna than squid. And it looks like the onaga learn. They're smart fish. They're not stupid fish down there. I mean,
they know
what's good and what is delicious for them, and they go for the tuna more than the squid.
One would have to then probably take a look at what's nutritionally. There, because obviously, if they're preferring one species, because it fills more of the requirements of what their dietary needs are,
right?
Or maybe what about their ability to catch them?
Well, it's very difficult. Like James said, you can only catch it at a certain time, like they bite in the morning and that's it. You can wait all day and they won't do it again, or you bite in the evening and you can wait all morning and they won't do it.
Okay, just for those that need to know, when we talk about bait, are we talking about whole fish? Are we talking about chunk fish? Are we talking about pulu? How are those two baits fed to the fish you're trying to catch?
Well, I chum them down, but I use also pulu to help entice them to eat. But like I said, they will go for the aku more than anything else.
And when you say aku, the chunks and the sizes that you're feeding them.
Yes, you have to know how to entice them, but you use that nice long aku so they know it's delicious.
And I'll tell you something, gang. You think that it's not. I mean, when we talk here, fishy, they mean it. These guys, and I think it is pretty important. We go back on this, James, and talk about that, you know, it's the fisherman's ability to know where to go. But when you get there, you don't know if it's going to bite. So you have a very short window.
That's true.
So you got to keep pretty good records about what's hot and what's not, and what are your what are your good numbers.
Yeah.
What do you do? What do you electronically? How do you have your grids mapped out? Your holes.
For me, I have a little black book, as I call it, a notebook that I record everything on. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, every year after year, I compare notes to see how the trend is.
What are, everybody always asks me when we get a chance to talk to some of our, you know, far out island fishers, CNMI or Guami, like you guys, is what's the reporting method like? I mean, what do you have to do to substantiate or explain or justify your catch?
Well, there's really nothing. It's actually just the krill survey that our aquatics division handles, and it's a voluntary survey.
And that when he says that at the krill, meaning it's your box, it's your locker, it's your cooler, whatever it is, right? Whatever you're bringing in.
Yeah, so not every day they're there.
Yeah.
You could see them in the morning. Now, if you come in after hours when they're, let's say they're there from 6 in the morning to 5 in the evening, and you come in after 5, you're not going to get surveyed.
Mm-hmm. When they say that, so in other words, it's kind of a loosey-goosey. But I would imagine that there's some concern that it's going to get more accurate, that it's going to get more, in other words, that some of these limits that are being suggested or impressed are going to, if you're saying that you are, you're overfishing, but the stock is still in pretty good shape. Somewhere those numbers are going to stop agreeing with each other.
Yeah, which is true. And you know, it's all about data, and it's getting the right data. Now, underreporting can come back to haunt you.
Yeah. Are there ways? I think this is important. Gang, listen, I don't care where you are listening, and we have listeners that are throughout the entire district. You need to be truthful on these things for any number of reasons. And you also have to not put up with somebody that's cheating and not doing something about it. Because if you let somebody get away with murder, it's going to affect you down the road. You know, so it must be very, very difficult to, you know, about how do these things get enforced? Is there any enforcement? Seems to me it's loose.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. And is it, Mike, similar in Saipan with respect to how the catch limits or how the catches are being reported?
Yes, many of our catch actually sometimes are inflated or typographical because just on the last meeting on the stock assessment, we talked to some of the people that are scientists about our stock and the data, and they said that your Southern Bank has been hitting it for the 1 year is 2012. We really overfish, but not over, you know, overfishing, but not overfish.
Yeah,
and,
that's scary though, because you know, they keep saying that. And then they all of a sudden that's the ACL is going to change.
Yes. Yeah. That's why my take on this is that fishermen go out there and you come in, report your catch, because if you under report, it's going to hurt our ACL.
You know, back in the day, before we could get electronic with the catch reports, I remember when I used to fill out mine, sometimes you'd fill out 6 months at a time and you'd put no fishing, no fishing, no fishing. And it came back to bite you because then they said, okay, well, then the allotment for that area, since there's only 1,000 tuna being caught there a year, that's what we're going to limit it at. Mm-hmm. And they say, wait a minute, there might be 10,000 fish, but nobody's going out and catching them. Or when they do, they're not reporting them.
That's right.
So how does it take to develop for James? What is it going to take in Guam for your other friends, your other fishermen to realize that somewhere we have to get together and somewhere all of this data has got to become more and more truthful or more accurate. Otherwise, things are likely to happen that we're not going to like.
Yeah, that's true. We need to get the buy-in from the other fishermen. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard sell in Guam. A lot of them feel that the data or the information will be used against them.
When you mentioned earlier, let's make sure that people understand, how much opportunity is there for exporting your catch from Guam?
There's none.
Yeah. This is very important, everybody.
Yeah, everything that's caught stays on Guam. Right. 90% of the seafood that's consumed in Guam is imported.
Yeah, and I was going to say, here's the problem. 90% of the food that is consumed, seafood that is consumed in Guam, is imported, which means that we need to rely more on the local catch than the imported catch, because if there's something happens in a place on the planet where that fish either stops being caught or runs into a problem, then people in Guam are going to be shy of their fish, and the fish prices will go through the roof.
That's right.
You know, so, I mean, this would seem to be, I know you're not going to say as a fisherman that you're being overpaid, but, I mean, isn't it important that you pick the fish that your customer is going to most want? How do you sell yours? First of all, I'll ask both of you. James, first on Guam. You have a good catch. Who are you selling to?
Well, lately with the Onaga, I have some exclusive customers, mm-hmm. whether it be
talking restaurants, hotels,
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so they develop a certain degree of dependence. You know, they think, okay, Mike, this is a you know, Easter weekend. We want a lot of this. We want a lot of that. That which puts the pressure on the fishermen.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a similar opportunity to sell fish that will be exported? I'm guessing no.
No, just the cargo costs, freight costs are so outrageous that it's just not feasible.
However, wouldn't it be feasible for some species?
Possibly. I think at one point when, you know, it's with Guam, I mean, with the islands, it's so easy to flood the markets with certain species, you know, when pelagic.
Okay, let's back that up. Let's make sure that people understand that. Okay, so 90% of the fish being eaten in Guam is imported. But when every now and again, when fishing gets really, really good, the fisherman almost doesn't want to bring his fish to market because the price is going to go from $3 down to $1, you know, or something.
Or they just won't buy it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the important part. They just can't take it. That doesn't happen on Oahu. That doesn't happen in the main Hawaiian islands. When we get overfished or when something, it gets out of here somehow. Somehow it gets going someplace. I'm guessing also maybe, Mike, does the same condition sort of exist in Saipan?
Yes, 90%, just like James, we do import 90% for, we're not catching enough for our own hotelos and otros.
But the percentage of people that consume sea fish is very high. So that must mean that a lot of people don't fish anymore. No. Or the fishing's not on their radar because they're going to count on you to go catch their fish.
Well, there's not many bottom fishermen to begin with.
Same as Guam.
Yeah, yeah. So a handful of them that does that is very hard fishing. You got to stay on that thing and really know what you're doing to stay on for 40 years.
Let me ask you the same thing. And gang, if you're just joining us here on Go Fish, this segment brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. It's really cool because we're talking to James Borja. He's a fisherman from Guam. And Mike Fleming is also a fisherman from Saipan. These guys are here for meetings on stock. I mean, I can't think, if I'm a fisherman, I'm fishing. But these guys are thousands of miles away from home participating in discussions that affect the entire fishery. So I asked James, Mike, what his customer base is. What's your customer base like?
My customer is basically all hotelers and restaurants. I have exclusive for my own catch, which is Onaga, just like James. And that's the most target fish and most like fish for the hotelers and all those.
Okay, so what is there, when we talked ACL before, gang, and ACL once again is annual catch limits. And those of us in the fishery, we know these acronyms by heart. We know that some of you don't. Are we at the catch limit now?
For Guam, no.
Okay, so that means that at the present time, that's why you're doing all of this homework up front. But you don't want days to get worse. You want them to either stay the way they are or get better. What's it going to take to maintain the ACLs that you've got?
For us, we need to provide better data.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start reporting as we catch. And just the complex of the species included in that list include, like I mentioned earlier, the shallow
getting
species.
Some fish maybe off the list.
Fish off the list, But it's all about reporting, and that's the only thing that's going
to
help us.
And now, by the way, when you say reporting, it would seem to be self-limiting. Because if you report you're catching all this fish, they might say, well, they're happy. That's what we ought to make the limit at. But what you're saying is that there are some species that would be being overfished, but it's still not clear it being overfished, but maybe not being threatened. I don't know what's the future of it. I mean, look, there's not going to be a fish that takes the place of Onaga. People want that snapper. They want that snapper, right?
That's true.
Yeah. How many? What's it like first in Saipan for you, Mike? I mean, weather notwithstanding, how often are you fishing?
Oh, I go twice a week for Onaga.
And when you fish for Onaga, you're traveling how far? What's the effort? How long does it take to do your trip?
It's an all-day trip. We start up in the morning and we go out as far as 50 miles on the bank and stay on that bank because fuel is limited, ice is limited. Once you're out there, you want to max up and then come home.
And generally speaking, on your boat, how long are you out?
12 hours, 10 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah. So that means that you run out, you get to your grounds, you catch your fish, you hope you have enough ice to get them home, and you get home and you treat them. And how fast does that fish go to the table?
Oh, man, it's already en route home. En route home already. I got contacts already calling me what time you're coming in. They're waiting
for
the fish.
I love that. However, that does, you know, there's no such thing as having a toothache, right? I mean, you got to go fishing. I've heard this before, and I'm guessing, let's go back to Guam and James Abora, I'm guessing that the pressure is on. I mean, you know, they have this high expectation of you, and yet what about when it comes to pricing? I mean, the only way you can stay in the red, I mean, in the black in fishing is to make some money. I mean, you have your customers, but do they understand how fish has got to be paid for and how much they got to charge at their end?
Yeah, the customers that I deal with, they've been good. You know, the price is nice for me. They understand.
Does it fluctuate much?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's been, the challenge we have is a lot of the fish prices in Guam have been the same for 10, 15 years.
Which is a real problem.
It is.
I know, you know, it almost needs to be, you know, increased very, very gradually and smallly, because you can't all of a sudden, when fuel prices take a double or whatever, you can't survive. You know, unless you catch a lot. So your numbers in your little black book becomes pretty important, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Repeat again that the people listening know why you're up here. What was this a series of meetings all about, and what's your takeaway? How pleased are you at the way they went?
Well, yeah, this is the first time actually they've invited us out to the stock assessment review.
Oh, that's great.
For the islands. Yeah. And
By the way, let me interrupt. You know, by the way, that we did on this program, we have covered these stock assessments, the methods of using them, the people doing them. And everybody realizes there's room for improvement. But most of them are saying that they're getting a little bit better at the accuracy of some of their science. I'm not sure that's happening in your neck of the woods, but it seems to be happening around here a little bit.
And it's a reflection. We've seen what Hawaii has gone through years ago, and now it's up our alley in Guam and the Northern Marianas, as well as American Samoa.
That's right.
And in coming in August, I believe there's going to be a big data collection workshop, mm-hmm. and they're inviting all the agencies out from each of the islands as well.
Yeah, how do you do your part? What sort of log or what sort of reporting methods do you use to keep control of your catch?
I have my own reporting, and whenever I get surveyed based from the aquatics division, I provide the information to them.
Great.
As well.
Yeah, and you know, I think they're, once again, they're in honesty. But we're dealing with something a little bit different. Those of you that are walking around your beach and thinking how this is affecting you on your beach, I think that the fields that Mike and James are in is a small field, because there aren't many people. Because it's tough. I mean, the method of fishing that they do, it sounds like it's a lot of fun, but it's kind of it's a lot of hard work. And I guess maybe Mike in Saipan, you said there's really only a couple of handfuls of guys doing this. How many?
Less than 12.
That's amazing. And for how many people? What's the population base?
Around 60,000.
Yeah.
Jeez, and it's only around
the 10, pressure is on, right?
10 bottom fishermen that does it, you know, on a full-time basis.
And are all of them, I mean, I know both of you guys prefer the Onaga. Most of us prefer the Onaga. We look at it as being the, you know, the deep seven, it's the number one fish.
That's
but what about other catch?
Oh, yes. Opaka-paka and all the other smaller fish species also like, but that's on the local delicacy. People will buy those, but the hotel will go for the bigger Onaga.
Yeah, and by the way, just so that people understand, what's a good size? What's a big Onaga in Saipan?
Oh, nice Onaga is around 20 plus up.
Yeah, okay? That's lovely.
20 pound up, yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, they look just spectacular on the table. And I know that it's not that far away, but is it sort of, James, the same thing? A 20-pounder in Guam is a big fish?
Yes, 18, 20, 25 pounds.
Yeah, and generally when they talk about these, sometimes we talk about head, guts, and tail on the price, you know. And I'm imagining that it sounds like what Mike was talking about might be the same thing with what you're talking about. And you actually have people that really will take them off the back of the truck on your way home. I mean, as soon as you come in with fish, it's all spoken for.
Yep.
Yeah. And when you sell that fish, are you head, guts, and tail? Are they weighing the whole fish?
Yes, the whole thing.
So that must mean, and maybe we get from both of you, on some of your good customers. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture here. I wish I could show this to you. As a matter of fact, I wish I could just hold this up to the microphone. But I'm seeing one monster Onaga, man. I would go home the happiest guy on campus with that thing. How heavy is that fish?
This one was 24 pounds.
Big fish, man. Yeah. That's almost like, God, I want to take this thing home. what can you tell us about being at the other end when you deliver? Mm-hmm. And they're waiting at the back door for your fish. They must have some pretty good cutters. They must really know how to dig the fish out to get every pound that they paid for and get it serviced.
Yeah, they're happy when I show up. They're just amazed. Everyone's taking photos. They're like, oh my gosh, this is a beautiful fish.
Yeah.
And And for the hotels, they usually have VIP gatherings. So they usually call and say, hey, we need some Onaga for a special
event. Yeah. And when you open one of those things up and put it on the bed of ice in a showroom, most people just jump for it. Is it the same in Saipan and in Guam? First of Saipan, Mike, is it the same around New Year's? Here, if you've had a good year, you have to have a big Onaga on the table. That's is that the right. same thing?
Yes, Onaga is the beautiful fish for the special occasion and holidays.
You know, I've seen this at weddings. We have weddings especially. And I've seen it this one where they had the fish laid out and actually cut right in place and the chopsticks right around it.
Yep.
Boom, people are just going right in that fish. What makes it so, what do you think, first of all, James, what do you think, what's so magic about it? I mean, I love it. It's a great fish. Why do you think it's so set apart? What's so special about Onaga?
It's the beauty of the fish and just the texture, the white meat, everything about it is just is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. First of all, you don't want to cook the heck out of this fish. It's just too good the way it is, right? Most of it. Well, anyway, I think it's sort of interesting. It's kind of nice. And by the way, gang, you can meet others from the fishery and find out a lot of other stuff by going to WP Council. Go to WPCouncil.org and find out a little bit more about what's going on. I'll tell you why. It's guys like Mike and James that come up here and share their mana'o. That's why we are so together in this thing. And that's why I'm hoping that some of our listeners, we have a different fishery here, but maybe first from you, Mike, and then to you, James, so we can sort of wrap up this segment of the program. And that is, you know, the fear of getting involved or not getting involved with the system. Obviously, you care to the point where you're coming all the way up here from Saipan that you're willing to give up and spend money and be not fishing for a while. What keeps you hopeful that we can get along and keep your livelihood going?
Well, fishing is a very important part of our life. We just can't help it. We're surrounded with waters and these are beautiful fish, and people who know how to catch them will really go out there and target those fish. You have to know what you're doing out there, and you go out and with all dedication, and you put your life out there and say, listen.
And listen, gang, when the next time you're at dinner and the waiter comes up or the waitress comes up to give you the special of the day and it's Onaga, you got to jump on this. That's going to make Mike and James pretty happy. Nice getting to spend a little bit of time with you, Mike, from Saipan. Continued success in your fishing. And same with you, James, in Guam. Thanks for joining us today. And thanks for, you know, stopping fishing for a time to come up and join us and share your mana'o a little bit.
All right. Thanks, Westpac, for this.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, and don't forget, we'll be back next week with another segment. And if there's something you'd like to hear on the program, you go to WPCouncil.org. That's WPCouncil.org. All right. Happy fishing, everybody. We'll see you next time. Sharp hooks. Following seas, big bites, a lot of fish. Catch some fish. We'll see you. Aloha.